This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Good evening and welcome to the Place to Be Nation pay-per-view reaction show for SummerSlam 2014. I'm Will. I'm here with the Place to Be's own Scott, Wrestling Culture's Dylan Hells, and my good buddy who I like to do podcasts with, Chris Zellner, also a voting member of the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. Always like to throw that in because he's the only friend I have that is one. So anyway, let's move on.
It's coming soon.
I know. You need to get Dylan and Scott on there, okay?
It adds as much importance as being a two-time Slammy Award winner.
So. Yeah, exactly.
Shit.
So anyway, guys, the SummerSlam, I know personally I hadn't been watching a lot of WWE TV lately, but, you know, I read up on the angles and the storylines, and I think I went 2-9 tonight in my predictions, so I don't want to talk about that. Y'all can talk about your predictions and if they did what you thought they would do. But the first match, Cesaro versus RVD. Lately, they've been jobbing Cesaro out, and I figured, okay, well, at the SummerSlam pay-per-view, they're going to reset him, and Cesaro's going to get a win over an established veteran, and we're going to see the Cesaro push. Wasn't to be. It was not to be. Scott, first, what did you think about the match, and second, the booking?
I thought the match was okay. I didn't catch the whole thing. I caught the last couple minutes, so I can't give an exact grade, but it didn't look too bad. I'm perplexed at what has happened with Cesaro. I've been very critical on our show, Place to Be Nation's main event, with my roundtable, which of course you have been a guest, Will, before, and you will be back soon, hopefully. that I feel like the booking in WWE, and we'll obviously expound on this throughout the show, is like a bunch of 11-year-olds with very short attention spans. I feel like they focus so much on our main event tonight and on that Bree Stephanie thing that everybody else has just kind of been going through the motions until they get around to him. And I think Cesaro has been the victim of that. I feel like anybody lower than like the top three feuds have just kind of been going through the motions, like being on WCW Saturday night and, you know, whatever. If he wins, he loses. If he loses, he wins, whatever. And that's what I think the problem is. And I'd like to think now, after what's happened tonight, that maybe they'll start to focus again on booking this mid-card the way it needs to be booked. And having said that, tonight was a clear example of how that needs to happen, because RVD I think he's washed up. I hate to say that, but he looks old. He doesn't have he's been feigning his punches. He just looks so out of it. And Cesaro is a beast. And this is what we get. It's depressing. So that, needless to say, in my evening specifically, did not get off to the start I would have liked.
I agree. What do you think, Dylan?
It was okay. I mean, the match was all right. We've seen this match a bunch of times, and this was, I guess, one of the least bad times, because I don't think these guys have good... Well, really, RVD doesn't have good chemistry with anybody. I mean, pretty terrible. But this was watchable. It wasn't offensive. It wasn't bad. It wasn't particularly awkward or anything. I thought Cesaro's mockery of the Rolling Thunder with the rolling double stomp was pretty funny. But as a whole, you know, I mean, I just hope Gabe Sapolsky knows how to book Cesaro when he's down there in 6 months after he gets released. Because I honestly don't see any point in him even being under contract at this point. I was very careful to sort of stay away from their burying Cesaro's talk and all that after the trends line started to look bleak for him shortly after WrestleMania. But at this point, he's on the fast track to being one of these guys where it's going to take a miracle for him ever to be as over as he was. Because what happens so often, with a lot of these guys. A perfect example would be a guy like Alberto Del Rio, who, of course, just left, is they get hot, they have a lot of support, they've got something going on that really works for them, and then it hits, you know, and the even Steven booking and the bad decisions and the, you know, all that stuff hits, and then no matter how over these guys were, they can never fully recover. And I think Cesaro is dangerously close to entering that territory. So hopefully we can see some Cesaro versus Timothy Thatcher and Drew Gulak matches on the Indies in 8 months.
Yeah.
Because I don't have any hope for him in the WWE at this point.
Man, that sucks, because we talked about it on the post-WrestleMania show. We were so amped up for Cesaro after Mania, man. Chris, do you basically feel the same way that Scott and Dylan do?
I don't think he's done yet. It's not looking good, of course. I mean, jobbing the RVD on a pre-show match, yeah, that's definitely not the best sign in the world. But I think there is a lot of value in Cesaro, and what this is indicative of to me, and I tweeted this tonight, is that, you know, John Cena can get criticized for a lot of stuff unfairly, but one thing that nobody criticizes him for, and is a valid criticism, is his friends. He never goes to bat for his friends behind the scenes as far as getting pushes, whether it's Cesaro or Big E or other guys in the past that he's been tight with. He's like the total opposite of Triple H, you know, who would go to battle for his boys. You never hear Cena do anything like that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And Cena has as much power in that company as just about anybody, you would think. So I'm sure if he put his foot down and said, hey, this guy deserves to have a better standing in the company, they would listen to him and try to, you know, make him better. So I just don't understand it. They had this mentality where they can job guys out and rehab them and, you know, make it right again. But these days, I don't know. It's tougher these days than it has been, because some people just don't. They get that mentality in their heads that this guy's job to RVD, he's job to, you know, other guys numerous times now, and that's his gimmick, is he's basically a glorified jobber. So I mean, they really would have to do something massive to get him back to a level that he was at before WrestleMania again.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, I'm afraid that I'm kind of in the dumps with Cesaro, man. It feels closer to Drew McIntyre or Chris Masters than it does like a Sheamus or a Miz or somebody, you know, that they...
And you know why? You know why? It's because he never... Much like Masters and McIntyre, he got a push, as they both did too, but it wasn't like he never got a push into the absolute upper tier of guys. But
right.
The Sheamus, he was an upper tier guy for a while. You know, they invested something in him to that degree. They never did that with any of those other guys over Cesaro, which is why it would not shock me in the least if he ended up getting released sometime in the next calendar year. I mean, that way, this calendar year or even next year, it would not shock me one bit if he ended up on the cutting room floor. I know that sounds crazy, but I don't think it is out of the realm of possibility at all.
I'm curious about what his contract is as far as money and stuff, and is he a big money guy? You know, is his contract enough to warrant them releasing him or something like that? Because, you know, I'm sure Del Rio was making more than he was. So,
oh, sure.
So, you know, I don't know if it would be, you know, as big of a cost-cutting move as cutting somebody else.
Well, here's the thing, though, too, is that, and this is something you won't get with Cesaro that we got with, like, Drew McIntyre, or, like, even Chris Masters had, like, personality issues that we do hear whispers about. Cesaro's, like, the consummate professional. Like,
yes.
He is the guy who goes in there, does his job, gets out, you know, punches the clock, so to speak. You know, he's not a guy who's going to ruffle feathers, you know, and I think that's probably what'll save him. No matter what, he'll be like that guy that's always there. I think.
And they like to use him on PR tours, too. They're doing that a lot now because he's, you know, he's very good at the other languages that he can speak. And, you know, he's got a presence about him on those. Like, he did really well in Mexico when they did the PR tour down there last month. So... that's one thing that's on his side in that regard.
Okay, well, that was just the pre-match, and we're already depressed, guys. The show hadn't even started yet, man.
But well, I will say that was one of the better RVD matches in this last run. I will give him that.
Okay, well, anyway, I'm already depressed. Let's just go home. All right, thanks for listening. We're going to leave. We're sad.
We got 8 more matches to boost our spirits or make them worse. So.
Well, let me tell you guys, I have the WWE Network. I have it on my mobile phone. I have watched the network on my mobile phone multiple places. I've never had an issue with the network during a pay-per-view or what are they called now, special events, whatever. Mm-hmm. Never had a problem with it. Tonight, I thought, hey, no problem. You know, I was out and about, and I was like, I can just watch the network, you know, while I'm running errands or whatever, and I'll catch the matches. Cesaro versus RVD, I had to read the results. The phone network kept freezing up on me. And then it did the same for me during Ms. Ziggler. And during Ms. Ziggler, I got the introductions, and then it kept freezing during the match. I couldn't make heads or tails of what happened, so I had to wait till I got home. And then I found out that we had a title change. So we're going to throw this one to you, Dylan. What'd you make of this one?
I thought it was an okay match. One thing I think that is a theme of this show, so I may as well get it out now, is I think this is one of the biggest positives of this show, maybe the single biggest positive, was I thought it was a very easy show to watch. And one of the reasons why was nothing went too long. There was no match or segment that I really thought, oh, this could have been cut by 3 or 5 or even 10 minutes. And that's often the case, even with stuff I like. So I thought this match, it was, watching it live, I got the impression it was very brief. I didn't have the stopwatch out or anything, but I got the impression it was less than 10 minutes. And, you know, it was fine for what it was. It wasn't, Miz, I think, I like the gimmick of the guy who doesn't want to take the, you know, doesn't want to get punched, in the face, but the match itself did not, I didn't think they did enough with that, although they did do one pretty cool spot with it. You had your sort of not surprising, but high energy near falls that you sort of always get in your matches like this. And, you know, it was a fine match. It wasn't great. I don't really understand the point of giving Dolph Ziggler the title. In no way am I saying I'm against it.
Well, you know why they gave it to him. They gave it to him because they're going to job him for the next 6 months as champion. Because that's what they did with this title.
I mean, it's just odd. It's just odd to me because they did this thing where, you know, they bring out Miz, they reestablish Miz, they give Miz this character, and then they turn around and have him lose right away to a guy who they've treated as completely expendable for the last, what, year? I thought it was just an odd choice. I don't oppose it. I would actually prefer to watch Dolph Ziggler wrestle than The Miz, so I'm perfectly fine with it. I just thought it was an odd choice.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay, well, okay, match, not bad.
What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was a good match. Miz has done well in this new character he's got because, you know, he is so good at playing that swarmy, you know, douchebag guy. And he's done very well in this role. Dolph, I mean, he's always consistent. You know what you're going to get out of him. And that's one thing that's in his favor in his matches. He's always going to work hard, bust his ass, you know, put on a show for the fans. Miz, he's not always like that in the ring. You know, he has his moments. But he's not as consistent as a worker. And you're right about the title being a jobber belt. So, yeah, Dolph is probably going to make the rounds now of jobbing to whoever they put in front of him, Seth Rollins or Rusev or whoever, you know, they feed for him. But the match itself, it was pretty good for what it was. The fans were into it. And that's one thing I can say about this whole show is that the fans were into most of the matches. So that also made it a easier watch than some of the recent shows we've had.
Agreed.
But I like to finish.
I'll tell you what, man. Saying Miz is inconsistent is like saying smoking causes cancer, man. I mean, that guy's just fucking rough, man. Like, I do like the new character, too. But I almost wish he was like a manager who got his ass kicked like a Jimmy Hart. Because I think he's a great character. But, yeah. God, I don't care about him in the ring. I didn't see the match. So, Scott, what are your thoughts, bud?
First off, I have to respectfully disagree with you guys. I thought the crowd sucked, to be honest with you, at least for the first, like, hour. I thought they were a little flat. They really got flat for the next couple matches. This one was not as bad. But I thought they kind of hit the shitter in the next couple matches. But I'm very happy that that Dolph won. I think we're understating this win a little bit. I think he's a guy who is due to maybe get repushed. Somebody's got to get pushed if we're going to kill the rest of the mid card. Somebody's got to look good. So I think Dolph's the guy. He's a company guy. He's put up with a lot of crap over the last 6 months. The match itself was good. What I like about The Miz is that this gimmick, and I said this to the people I was watching in the show with tonight, this gimmick is almost like Rock 2003, only like with indie, with like low rent, like indie movies. Like, I almost feel like the gimmick is that Miz is a poser who's pretending to be a movie star like Rock 2003, which was one of the greatest heel runs in the history of the company. Except we're not taking him seriously because the movie he was in was crap that goes right to DVD. So having said that, I kind of enjoyed, what the hell was he wearing tonight? Look like a moo-moo. What was that thing?
Loved it, man. I thought that Jesus. Was great.
And it was plus, a hybrid of his Robert Evans look, but with a coat.
Yeah. Hey, that was what my screen was frozen on when the network froze on. It was just missing that outfit. I was picking up some pizza for the family, man. I was just cracking the fuck up. Those people thought I was an idiot. They're like, why is this guy laughing? Yeah, I was like, yeah. No, you cannot see my wrestling frozen picture pizza awesome. Guy.
But the match was good. As good as it was gonna be. But I'm happy. I'm surprised. I did not pick Miz to win this match. I did not pick Dolph. I did pick Miz because he seemed like he was being taken seriously, but again, when it comes to this mid card right now, Jesus only knows what their plan is. So I am very stoked that Dolph is the Intercontinental Champion. I will never disrespect the Intercontinental title.
I'm not the one booking, man. I'm not disrespecting it.
The creative team
is disrespecting it.
I don't consider it a jobber belt. I know we think it is, but I have a good feeling about Dolph being repushed now. I do.
I'll tell you what, Scott. I'm going to say this about the title, because we discussed the titles in the last Fixing the WWE special we did here at the Place to Be Nation. That's my plug. I'll get all of you in the later plugs. Having said that, we talked about it being a jobber title. I mean, I think once you unify the U.S. and the Intercontinental title back to just the Intercontinental title, I think maybe then they'll start using it the way they traditionally did, which was to elevate guys. But right now with both titles, I don't think that we're going to see a change in the way they treat the Intercontinental Champion. To me, it's like a sick in-joke how badly abused it is. But anyway, okay, can we move on to the next match, guys? Anything else to say?
Let's do it.
All right. Next match, Chris, I'm going to tell you, man, Dylan and I, we've talked a lot about the sliding scale for Divas. No sliding scale for this match for me tonight. I enjoyed Evil Paige. I thought that this match was a good match on its merits. It didn't matter if it was women in there or not. And I'm going to give this one so far, the best match of the first three, just because it's the only match I saw. I'm just saying. So, Chris, what did you think of this Divas title match?
Easily the best match of their feud so far, without a doubt. Paige has been awesome in this new character she's gotten. You can see where they terribly miscast her when she first came in. I mean, she's really put it out on this one, no doubt. And AJ's, you know, done pretty good as a babyface as well. You know, even though she was great as a heel, but she's been effective in that position. But yeah, the work in this match was very, very good for them. You know, the sliding scale and nothing, we don't talk about, it's always there in the death slot. There was no death slot tonight, so they got to be in the second spot on the show, and you know, it was good for them. Paige's Rampage, that is so much better than the Paige Turner. She definitely must use this as her finisher now.
I agree.
I mean, that was a sick looking move there. I mean, that was the Homicide's 187 or something like that. Somebody's move.
Wait, I thought the 187 was the one that Hurricane Helms used to use.
That's the Cop Killer.
Oh, the Cop Killer. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was nice because you don't. Nobody's really used that in WWE, so that was a cool spot to use.
Wait, that's not true. Last month, like, 5 matches finished on, like, a cradle DDT.
Not like that, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, regular DDT, although the best DDT of the night came later on. But
Don't spoil it.
Yeah, but yeah, this match, I had very low expectations going in, and it totally exceeded it. Thumbs up for both these girls.
Scott, I know you're normally not a Divas guy. I know you're normally taking the piss break during this match. Did you stick around for this match?
Yes, because I love Paige.
Oh.
I absolutely love Paige. So I will stay. I will hold it in for the Paige matches. This match was very good. I think AJ has brought out the best in her, and that DDT was sick. As her finisher, obviously they're going to have to come up with some kind of ways where her opponents would have to put her in something, because unless she can just lift somebody up and drop them, she obviously has to get them in some kind of angle where it really makes effect. So, would I love to see it as her finisher? Absolutely, but they'll obviously have to think of some way to get her at that, get her opponents in that angle.
Well, she's pretty strong, man. She has that finishing submission where she's basically hanging the girl from her hips. I mean,
yeah, that's what. I'm just pointing that out. I agree. I think as a finisher, that move is great. I'm just curious to see how her setup will be for that finisher. That should be interesting. But
right.
I like the match. I love Paige. I think I'm the only one like in the world that does. I think she's fantastic. But then again, I love British chicks. So
that's what it is. I think she's British chick fetish. It's not about the rest.
I think she's a great worker. I really do.
Bad teeth and all. Sorry.
I think, hers aren't really that bad. Wait about 15
joking,
years.
I'm joking, man.
So wait about 15 years. She'll look like one of the Doctor Who aliens. No. I think AJ has really brought out the best in her. Her opponents, I was at Extreme Rules, where she fought Tamina, and that was... And then I saw her... I mean, I saw her other matches on TV, and then I was at Money in the Bank, and she faced... who did she face at Money in the Bank? I can't remember now.
I don't remember either.
Zellner,
you're the historian. Come on.
Who did she face at Money in the Bank?
Naomi.
And Naomi, and I like Naomi. And they had a pretty decent match for the two of them. So she's gotten better, and I think AJ has brought out even more for her. So I expect good things, particularly as a heel, out of Paige. As for AJ, I don't know how long she even sticks around, to be honest with you.
Well,
I'm curious to see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, man. But I don't know. I think... The matches I had seen with Paige and NXT were great. I mean, we've talked about those, like, you know, for the NXT specials. But I haven't seen one good Paige WWE match yet until tonight. And that's why I emphasize that there's no diva sliding scale here. Because I know that she could be good, but she was just terribly miscast. Dylan, no diva diving? Diva diving?
Diva diving.
No diva sliding scale here. What was your assessment of this?
It's pretty good. I thought it was kind of along the lines of the sort of what I call the Big E sprint matches.
Yeah.
The match goes 5 or 6 minutes. They let them do basically nothing but big spots, but disguised well enough. There's nothing wrong. There was some building heat and some heel work from Paige. I thought she did a good job with it. But
those nasty headbutts, man. Those headbutts early on were fucking tight.
But it was basically a match built around a handful of very carefully and well-timed spots that were, in my view, pretty well executed. And I think that is a very good way to book certain type of wrestlers. What I don't think this does is tell you really how good either one of these are. Because my one of my big criticisms has been that I wanted to see, you know, Paige as a worker get time. If you go back and listen, I've been consistent saying that. I want to see her prove on the main roster that if they give her 15 minutes on a big show and not in the suicide slot, that she can deliver with a big match. What she's shown me tonight is that she can, you know, they can piece together a piecemeal, basically a TV bout, based around a couple of really big spots, and it'd be pretty fun and entertaining, and that, frankly, is not really surprising to me. So I enjoyed it, but to me, the jury's still out on how good Paige is actually going to be on the main roster, because they still have not put her in a slot where I feel like we know if she can hold up her end of a longer match.
Yeah,
and they may never, because of how they booked Divas.
I was going to say, but even on TV, man, I've seen her at plenty of TV matches, and they all sucked. So, you know, for five or six matches.
Sure. Like I said, this was, and actually I disagree with you, Will. I thought the Alicia Fox matches were pretty good for what they were. You know, I thought they were fine little 4-minute matches. So I don't even agree with that. But my big criticism of Paige has not been that she can't have a fun 5-6 minute match. That's never been my big criticism of her. My criticism of her is for somebody who's often talked about as a great, potentially division changing and defining wrestler. On the main roster, she's had some pretty bad flubs. And the one or two times they've let her go long, I think, have been particularly poor. So I have no reason to believe that that's not the case. I'd like to believe that's not the case, because she certainly was very good in NXT. But to me, there's still an open question with her. That's not to say this match was bad, though, because I thought it was a fun match. I thought it was a good match.
Well, the question with this match and a lot of the matches tonight is, where do you go next? You know, there's a lot of these matches we've had tonight were felt like feud-ending type matches. So it's like, where do you go with Paige and AJ? Do you do it again? Or do you bring up Charlotte? Which I think we may actually get some NXT call-ups tomorrow night, maybe. I don't think so, man.
Dude, the way that their last few call-ups have gone, maybe your Ascension might show up, unfortunately, but...
Yeah. Did you just say unfortunately?
Dude, I think they suck. What's good about them? Their music sucks. The idea that...
Most of the NXT themes suck. Though that'll change when Jim Johnston gets a hold of them, but...
So the thing with them, though, is... Yeah, they're not the best in the world... But they're different than what's going on right now. And so that's what WWE needs, is they need some type of different personalities to shake it up a little bit, and especially on the women's side. You know, Nikki Bella turning heel, which we'll talk about later on. I don't know what that's going to mean. But, you know, bringing somebody like Charlotte up and try to make Emma seem something more than a joke character.
Another diva in so she can appear in the 17 diva battle royal at WrestleMania is going to make a difference. Bringing Charlotte up is not the problem with the divas division. Dylan, we need to do a Fixing WWE Divas edition with Chris Zeller as our guest, so we can talk this out at a later session. That is not.
We could debate the merits of Bayley and Becky Lynch or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you guys stretch that to an hour and a half.
No shit. Well, trust me, there's enough perverted things we can drop that I'm sure we can fix this. Anyway, let's turn the page on this match.
Oh.
You knew what was happening. You knew what was coming.
Oh God.
Anyway, let's remember the fallen soldiers and all that shit and talk about our flag match here. Scott, Rusev versus Jack Swagger. Overall thoughts, bud?
Love Rusev. Perfect match. Hate Jack Swagger. Hate his face turn. He's taken two of my favorite guys and sloppily injured them. That was Dolph last year and then Barrett this year because he sucks at life. And now we reward him with a face turn, and seeing him tap like a bitch was the highlight of my night. I love Rusev. I love the Russian national anthem playing. He's an awesome heel right now. He's exactly what the company needs. He's almost like a Brock for the mid-card. I'm kind of digging, I will say this, I'm kind of digging this whole, let's lay out these big, big, powerful heels, because I think the company needs to get a little more, and I think this is Triple H's influence. I think we need to see a lot more black and white again in terms of booking, you know, bad guy, good guy. And I think having clear bad guys is what this company needs. Getting rid of the scratch logo means getting rid of the Attitude Era way of thinking, finally. And I think this is the key. The guy that gets booed like crazy, sitting there with, you know, with Putin or what did Cole call him tonight? Putin? I can't believe it's, or not Putin. Yeah, Putin. Putin. Sounds like a comic character. But, you know, he was fantastic. I mean, is he a moveset Marvel? No, but not everybody is CM Punk or Samoa Joe. You need a guy that could do five things and five things well. And I think his moves are good. I think he does need to wear boots, though. I think I'm tired of the weird Tonga kid feet.
I like those little feet tape warmers.
The little they're like snuggies for ankles. It's like,
yeah, I like
pretty
it.
Funny.
But training hard in the snow of Siberia, his heels are hard as rocks. He doesn't
Rocky
need
four,
boots.
You know? But I think he's awesome. And sitting there while we all have to listen to the full Russian national anthem, that's just pure good heel. And the match was meh. But I love his character. I think tomorrow night, I mean, this is easy booking here, guys. Tomorrow night, crushes Sheamus, who we didn't see tonight, crushes Sheamus, takes the U.S. title, and like a la Lance Storm in WCW, change it to the Russian Heavyweight Championship.
Oh, that'd
be great.
Put
the flag on it, the hammer and sickle, go old school.
I love it, man. That's great.
Bring back Nikita Koloff. I mean, I think that'd be great.
What'd you think about this, Dylan? Because this kind of is reminiscent of like the match last month or those Big E matches, you know, nice short sprint, you know, but some really, really good
stuff. I thought it was very different than the Big E matches, actually. I thought it was night and day.
God damn,
dude.
We are on opposite sides tonight.
I just don't see how this was even close to the Big E matches, really, but I thought this was a match that was, at the end of the year, this match will stand out to me because it was a match that was built around body part psychology, which you almost never see in the modern WWE. Very, very rare do you see that. And as Will knows, I'm a big mark for that. So that's something that I'm immediately going to look for in a match. It was hurt because Jack Swagger is mechanically very poor and Rusev is, even though I agree with almost everything Scott just said in general about his character, right down to the Russian title taking over the U.S. title, which I wrote a huge fantasy booking thing laying out almost that exact scenario a while back, oddly enough. But to me, Rusev he still does some things that are a little off, like completely whipping on that kick tonight. He's a guy that oftentimes does that, and I can't put that on his opponents every single time because I've seen him do it too many times now.
Which whiff? When did he whiff the kick?
He did a spin kick toward the end of the match that may have touched Jack Swagger's eyebrow. Barely. Even the announcers said, "Oh, it was a glancing blow." You know, they didn't even bother trying.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the kick that Swagger turned into an ankle lock. Okay.
No, as a match, this was kind of a hard match to grade because I absolutely loved it as a match. I did. I thought it was great in a way, in the sense that they utilized all these psychology aspects that you rarely see in modern wrestling. And I'm far from a guy that cares a whole lot about execution. But the execution of certain things was just enough off where it took it down a peg for me. Jack Swagger he moves around the ring so awkwardly. Nothing he does looks natural at all. And it really, really was kind of embarrassing at times in this match and kept it from being what I would call a truly, like, thoroughly bell-to-bell great match. But for what they were doing, I thought it was actually excellent. The psychology was great. The storyline was great. The right guy won, which I was really happy to see because I was afraid they were going to have Swagger win. And as much as I love the way this storyline has unfolded with Zeb being such a great promo and everything, there was no really good reason for Jack Swagger to win a single match in this feud.
Yeah. Here's how I would have had Swagger win it. If this would have been like the old capture the flag rules,
I still Swagger think that would be bad.
Then Swagger would have had to win it. I don't think so. We're Americans. Wrestling fans are xenophobic. They want to wave the flag. They don't like the flag being abused.
Yeah, but that's, you may as well take a gun and shoot Bruce up in the face because he's over that. I mean, you can't beat Jack Swagger. Cannot.
If you capture a flag, it's different.
It doesn't matter.
Yes, it does matter.
It doesn't matter. No, that's fantasy. That's delusional. You can't beat a guy. This is not consistent. This is one of the things that drives me crazy. People say wins and losses matter except when they don't. Just because you add a stip that allows you to hide and say, well, I wasn't really pinned, that's what WWE's been doing for years with guys. Well, he only lost in a tag team match. Who gives a fuck? Once the guy undefeated loses, especially to a guy who's not perceived as a top guy, it will hurt. It will hurt. I 100% believe that. I don't think you can get around that. There's a part of me that wants to say you're right, because, hey, it's a capture the flag, and there's no pretense of a fall occurring. But I can't envision any way, based on what we've seen over the last several years with these guys who take falls, or they get counted out or whatever, every time they do that, the person ends up getting hurt. So I was glad they didn't do that.
That would apply. Let me tell you what would have happened in my little scenario. This is how I would have booked it. If it was capture flag, it wasn't. So, I mean, we're fucking fantasy booking here, so it doesn't matter. But the point is, you know like how Big E does that big spear to the outside or whatever, right?
Yep.
Fucking, you have fucking Zeb, Lana on the outside jawing each other. Swagger's out there. Let's say Swagger's out on the outside. Fucking Rusev does his fucking Big E dive outside. He wipes out Zeb and Lana. He's so heartbroken over his fucking Lana. He's there holding her, you know, fucking, I will kill you. I will avenge my Lana and all that bullshit. Swagger runs in there and grabs the American flag. Crowd goes nuts. There's no way that makes Rusev look bad as a loss.
Totally disagree. I still disagree because I don't think he needs to be showing any sympathy for Lana.
It's not a loss like a pin or a tap out or a pass out, you know. Let's move on, you know. Chris, what did you think? The tiebreaker between me and Dylan, too.
Well, first off, I agree with Dylan, and this is not the Big E match style. This went way longer than those matches, and there was a ton of selling here. And I thought that Rusev was fantastic selling that leg. I thought that was some of the best selling I've seen in that promotion in a long time. And that's something, a testament to him, you know, for a guy who's been on the main stage for not even a full year yet. And it's also shown the improvement that he has had since he's got called up to the main roster. Every month he seems like he's getting better. So that's good for down the road, because we know where he's going down the road. He's going for Cena. So you gotta get him ready for that main event style. So and I also agree with Dylan that he had to win this match. You could make the argument that yes, if they do a flat capture the flag match, Swagger grabs the flag, but Rusev does a job or submit or whatever. Yeah, but still, it's the optics of the situation of seeing him lose. You know, it may not have been a direct loss, but the fact that he still lost to Jack Swagger. So I agree with that, and also agree with about the whole Swagger situation. He has botched this face turn. There's something going on with him. I don't know what it is. I don't know maybe if he needs to maybe add some more weight to his frame to help.
Weight to his frame?
I think if he added more weight to his frame, he's got that gangly look at times. You know, and he's a big dude. But he's got this gangly type look. He needs to, I don't know, he maybe needs to transform himself a little bit, you know, and may adapt a different type of style.
I guess. I don't know, man. I think y'all are on crack. Anyway, y'all think I'm on crack. Anyway, guys, let's move on to a match. Dylan, I specifically set you up for this match first, because I know you have a lot to say about this feud. And then after Dylan, we're going to hear from Chris and his thoughts, and then Scott. Okay, so Dylan, once you're done, pass the baton to Chris, who will pass it to Scott. Seth Rollins versus Dean Ambrose.
I think this feud has been booked fucking horrible. I think it is actually shocking to me how poorly this feud has been booked. If you sort of look at it, big picture from beginning, middle, and end, and sort of trace every step of it along the way. And the fact that Dean Ambrose, the supposedly crazy guy, picks a lumberjack match of his choice is just sort of like the ultimate the ultimate example of how stupid the booking in this has been. As a match, it's kind of a weird match because I did not go on Twitter during the show, and I was not posting at ProWrestlingOnly.com or anywhere else during the show. But I did, right before this show started, I did go back and look to see some of the thoughts that were sort of matriculating around. And I was kind of amused at how polarizing this match was, because it seemed to me that there was a lot of people who really loved it, and a lot of people who were, I wouldn't say they hated it, but they were disappointed by it, or they were almost indifferent to it. I can't say I was disappointed by it, because as soon as I heard it was a lumberjack stiff, I figured that that they would do what they could to, basically maximize that stiff in the sense that there would be a bunch of spots with guys doing stuff, which is exactly what happened. There would be a bunch of spots where Ambrose and Rollins would dive or fall onto the lumberjacks, which is exactly what happened. None of that was surprising to me. The finish with Rollins going over and the way he did it, that wasn't particularly surprising to me. What was surprising to me was that they went out of their way to sort of undermine the entire stiff, and that the guy who did it was the guy who chose the stiff. I understand the argument of, well, Dean Ambrose is a lunatic and he does crazy things, but my understanding of his gimmick is that he's a lunatic, not that he's an idiot. I thought this match made him look kind of stupid because he gets thrown to the floor and he immediately starts fighting with lumberjacks. And it's like, you picked the stiff, you stupid fuck. Why are you doing this? It was just if you're one of these guys who really, really likes the sort of individual big moments and spots, I could see maybe really loving this. I thought it was fine. I thought it was pretty good for what it was, but it was never going to be great because the stipulation alone was pretty much going to preclude that. And the way they used the stipulation, I thought was kind of puzzling. So it was fine. At the end of the day, it did further the feud because of the way Rollins won, but it seemed like a really weak first match for this feud in the sense that these guys can do a lot more. And if I was somebody who was a more casual fan than I am and I saw this, I would just think, okay, well, whatever. I don't think that this would really be the sort of match that would make me care much more about this feud going forward, even though from a logical perspective, I think they did the right thing to progress it. So I kind of have weird feelings about this. I didn't hate it, but I didn't think it was great. I didn't, think it was poorly booked in terms of who won, but I thought it was poorly booked in terms of how they used the stipulation. So I have very odd feelings about this match. Chris, how do you feel about it?
I thought it was highly entertaining. I thought it was a great spectacle. I thought that they did a really good job of maximizing the lumberjack gimmick. Although I was depressed that Sandow didn't do a Joe LeDuc tribute for that. I mean, he just was out there in like a little sweatshirt and slacks. So I'm kind of upset with him on that regard.
You could see Ambrose cutting his arm with an axe as like the Duke. That'd be awesome. Continue.
But that would have been fantastic. But I really dug the work on outside the ring. I thought it added to the chaotic nature of the match. Where the suplex to the lumberjacks, that was a pretty great spot. The battle in the crowd where the lumberjacks had to go in the crowd was cool. Kane coming out, I was like, oh my God, here we go again. But it made sense in a way that he was trying to get these lumberjacks to bring it back in. So he stayed the match, but he didn't really stay in the match. So, and I dug the spot where Rollins was trying to get away, and there were the Usos and Big E, and hanging out to get him. The one thing about Kane, though, I did love, and I was hoping that it would lead to something, was when he got in the ring and he broke up Ambrose's pin. Goldust jumped in. I was like, oh shit, Goldust is about to fuck Kane up. You know, this is gonna be great. And then of course Kane puts him down on his ass. But I thought, man, this is gonna be awesome here. Goldust is gonna finally get some shit here. But yeah, the finish made sense to continue the feud. You know, they're gonna have another match at the next pay per view. Hopefully, it will be more of a standard style match. But that's kind of going in reverse of how, you know, things are supposed to be. You're supposed to start out more standard than build up, but that's the way wrestling is these days. But yeah, I mean, the guys that are over watching the show with me, they love the match. Like I said, it was highly entertaining. And sometimes, yeah, the logic wasn't always right, but I put it aside sometimes for the sake of the match.
Scott.
Kane ruins everything. So,
that's my gimmick, Scott. What's going on, man? Fuck Kane. As we said in part one, Kane should be off the roster, retired.
He really should be. He brings nothing to the table. I was hoping, since he was Triple H's boy and he'd get no repercussions, I was just hoping Goldust would potato him. But I love the match. I agree with, I think it was you, Dylan, that said it. I thought the gimmick at first, Dean Ambrose is all about being reckless and brawling everywhere, and now you give him a gimmick, a match where he can't go anywhere. So at first thought, I'm like, this is friggin' stupid. But I have to say, they found a way to say, well, so there's guys outside the ring. Screw it. And they brawled up the steps. I thought it was incredible. I thought it was great. And I'm talking to some people offline about, is this the greatest lumberjack match of all time? That's kind of like, you know, picking the greatest, you know, pink slip on a pole match of all time. It's kind of hard. Hard to gauge.
There's some pretty great lumberjack matches, like in World Class. This doesn't even come close.
No, I remember it's another good lumberjack match. It was 2 weeks before WrestleMania 1. Tito and Valentine for the IC belt at the Garden.
Yes.
Very good lumberjack match, too.
Yeah, that was good. But,
that might be the best one of all time.
Yeah, and that was straps. It would have been cool if they had straps, the Canadian lumberjack match.
Maybe that's what's coming up next.
Maybe. I think these two are going to fight at Hell in a Cell.
That makes total sense.
Yeah, but because I think those two would absolutely destroy each other, and that's what everybody wants to see. I didn't have an issue with the way it was booked, except for Kane. He's just, nobody gives a shit anymore. Nobody really cares. I don't know. I don't understand why they think anybody cares. And that's the worst part. But I love the chaos of it. I've enjoyed the build. I think it might have been you, Chris, that said you weren't crazy. It was maybe it was Dylan, who didn't really love
Dylan
the build.
Dylan hates the build.
I think it's all-time level bad.
I think the little things, the one thing I'm liking about Ambrose, the little things. I thought the best part, I don't know if it was this past week's Raw, it might have been the Raw the week before, when he just decided to casually, while Rollins is wrestling Heath Slater, they just casually open up the briefcase. Even if it logistically makes no sense and it doesn't matter what's in it, the visual of him just opening the briefcase and just ripping the thing up with that look on his face like, what are you going to do about it, asshole? It's genius. Logistically, does it matter if there's anything in the briefcase? No, probably not. But in terms of the way you book the Money in the Bank winner, okay, you could have a freaking sandwich in there. Does it even matter? But just that visual of him like, you know, here's your contract, and I just ripped it up, dickhead. You know, I love that look. So I haven't been too upset with the build.
Here's where I'm going to disagree with you, Scott, because you're saying it was the little things. When we had the Shield together, and I think Dylan will agree with this, it was like being fed filet mignon or like chicken cordon bleu every night. And then now we're like in this no Shield poverty zone where we're happy to get the scraps thrown out into the garbage at the end. and we're going to pretend those scraps are filet mignon because we don't have filet mignon anymore. So we'll just pretend it's filet mignon. I'm not saying you're pretending. I'm just saying that's how it feels to me. Like with the Shield breakup, man, like, and we're going to get to this with Roman Reigns. I didn't mind them breaking up, but the way that everybody went forward has really been a bummer for me.
Well, I'll tell you this. The guy that's benefited the most from the breakup is Ambrose. He's broke out as a single star. He's getting a damn movie. I mean, Ambrose is the guy that's won this whole thing so far.
In a sense, yes. But See, I didn't like that very thing that Scott liked. It, on the one hand, I agree with him that Ambrose is great at the little things. I think he's always got, I mean, I've been a fan of him since he was John Moxley, in large part because of the fact that his mannerisms, the way he reacts, the way he sells little things, are very different than what you see in most modern wrestling. But to me, that was a comedy gimmick. That was a mid-card comedy angle of shot. I mean, these guys were very hot in the Shield, and I think they've been progressively taking down a peg and a peg and a peg since that time. And to me, that was like, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I expect to see, you know, out of like El Torito and Hornswoggle.
No, like, I mean, but like, John Cena does corny shit like that all the time.
Sure he does, and it's not any good.
But I'm saying, but it's not like the WWE doesn't do cheesy shit in their main events. I mean, this is just the way that what they do.
But the difference is, John Cena has not been portrayed the way Dean Ambrose, or Roman Reigns, or these guys have been portrayed for the last year. John Cena's gimmick is that he's a happy-go-lucky, aw-shucks, you know, modern-day Beaver Cleaver.
Yeah.
That's literally his gimmick. Whereas Ambrose's gimmick is that he's a crazy guy who's sort of above that sort of stuff. And, you know, it's not necessarily that I thought the execution of it was bad, because I think Ambrose, again, I agree with the idea that he's very good at little things. It's that I don't think that's what he should be doing in the first place. I don't think, you know, that sort of stuff does him any favors. And I think he's actually less over now than he was a month ago. I mean, a month ago, I thought he was getting huge pops, and now I think he's over, especially when he does his big spots in the matches and, you know, when he makes sort of certain facial stuff. But he doesn't get that sort of reactive emotional response to the degree that he was getting a month or 6 weeks ago. Or at least that's not my perception of it.
I'll say this, though, man. Some of those crowds, it's impossible to tell who's over 1 week and who's over.
Exactly.
I mean, and you know, we're going to have that podcast out, too, coming up with me, Dylan, and Johnny P., where we discuss modern-day wrestling fans and reactions at shows and everything. So look for that, too. Another plug, how to do it. But having said that, I kind of agree with all three of you. The stuff they did right in this match, I really enjoyed. But I also agree with Dylan that there were times where it was like, I'm not feeling this, you know? And so I like this match. I didn't love it, you know? I'm waiting for the match from these two where I love the match, you know? So let's move on to our next mid-card feud, which this one has, in a way, been booked horribly as well. Bray Wyatt versus Chris Jericho. And Chris, your thoughts on this match?
Well, this was better than the last show. I'll at least give it that. And the right guy won the match. But Jericho is getting in that RVD territory, you know, where it's like, you don't really want to see him anymore. He's not doing anything new or interesting. He's just out there, basically out there for a paycheck in some ways. And it's kind of sad because, you know, Jericho used to be somebody fun to watch. I don't know if he's just not feeling this babyface character or just going through the motions or whatever. But, he's not the same as he used to be. And Bray, he hasn't been the same since Cena, the Cena feud, which we've talked about that on numerous other shows. So that's nothing new. But it's another thing I talked about earlier is, what do you go next? And Bray is, where do you go next with him? I mean, who do you set up for him now? I don't know. I mean, I would think that Sheamus and Rusev is the upcoming feud for the U.S. title. But what babyface is there for Bray to go against? It's not. I mean, Cena, you ain't gonna do that again. I don't think they're gonna go for Jericho another match, although they probably will.
I think they will.
But it's like, who do you put with Bray now? It's a weird situation, and do you put him back with Harper and Rowan and have some type of six-man feud? I mean, I don't know. It's weird booking going on now.
You know what? Scott, hold on that idea.
Yeah.
But you know what made me also depressed about that Lumberjack match? Now that we're bringing up Bray Wyatt, all the talent that was surrounding that ring that wasn't used on this show tonight. Goldust, the Usos, the Harper and Rowan. You know what I mean? Just like, it just reminded me like why I'm so sad right now when we look at Bray Wyatt and this go nowhere feud and the go nowhere mid card jobbers. Anyway, go Scott. I'm sorry.
Here's an outside-the-box thought. Turn him face and feud with Brock. It's a guy who doesn't care about pain.
Well,
how many times against Jericho tonight did he say, I'm already dead? So have him take on a guy who does nothing but destroy against somebody who doesn't care if he is, but he's going to take the guy with him.
I did have an idea of that maybe put him with Randy Orton. I don't know if it was flip-flop or Orton face. But I had a thought about that tonight. But I don't, you're right. A few with Brock. But yeah, but you job Bray out the Brock this time. So you've been jobbing the Cena, and now you're jobbing the Brock.
Well, so, that's true, too.
Yeah,
that's the only problem.
I was even looking at Roman Reigns, versus Bray Wyatt, just to kind of get both of those guys away from those old heatless wonders, But I don't know. I think both guys have been damaged goods. What about the match, Scott? Any thoughts?
I agree 100% I think it was you, Chris, that said it, that Jericho is also in that. And I think we've been saying that since he came back. Because when you come back so many times, who cares anymore? And it's not like he's coming back. See, here's where, you're in the new era of non-kayfabe. Everybody knows why he's coming back, because Fozzy's not touring. And the minute Fozzy's touring, by Jericho. Oh, Fozzy's not touring. Here, Jericho comes back. Nobody cares anymore. And he doesn't bring... He's not like a Punk. He's not like a guy who can show up and just give you 5 stars. Like a Shawn. That kind of thing. I mean, Shawn is in his own realm. obviously, I'm going very high end with that comparison.
Dude, do I need to get you and Dylan back so we can have the Shawn Michaels show? Let's do that. I think that would be an awesome show.
Dylan, do you like anybody?
Yes.
Do I have to do a whole thing on the click?
Hey, Shawn Michaels is really good in 1986.
Awesome. That's awesome with Marty Jannetty's secondhand guy.
I love the Rockers.
Will, if we're going to do a thing on, me loving the whole clique, we'd have a podcast that's 9.5 hours. So,
So upcoming in our great Place to Be Nation debate, Shawn Michaels. Okay. No, we need to do it, man. I mean, we just have different ways of looking, because, I love Rockers Shawn Michaels, too, man. But
The thing is, I don't hate Shawn as much as people think I do. But anyway,
go to 95 Shawn Michaels.
Anyway, that's another debate. We'll be here till 8 o'clock. I like the match. We knew that Bray was going to win. That was pretty much self-explanatory. Did love the Texas Chainsaw Massacre apron and the alternate green pants. One thing you got to love about Bray, he does dress up for the big matches. He had those awesome... what is it, burgundy rosé pants for WrestleMania, and then the green pants for SummerSlam. So he does dress up for...
That's dressing up, yeah.
For the big holidays.
Kind of like Brian putting on those fuzzy boots for me.
He had his butcher's apron on.
I love the butcher's apron. That thing's awesome.
I think if you're going to do a butcher gimmick, though, you need blood. We need to bring black blood. Can't have a butcher's apron without...
Did you say black blood? Oh, God, we don't need him.
Billy Jack Kane. Yeah, bring back Billy Jack Kane.
I did not say black blood, but if you want to hear more about black blood, listen to the latest where the big boys play Great American Bash 91 show.
That's right.
Anyway. But,
no, it was good. I really liked the match. We knew the win was coming. We don't need a tiebreaker. That's what I'm getting tired of now. Every feud has to be 2 out of 3 matches. I'm getting sick of that now. All right, Bray won. Tough shit, Jericho. Move on.
That's it. I agree.
Time to go to something else. I'm tired of these 2 out of 3. Oh, why do we need a rubber match now? No, we don't need one. You lost, Jericho. Move on. But a big win for Bray. I love the Sister Abigail into the barricade. Is that what it was? Yeah. That was pretty awesome. And good win for him. He needed it.
What do you think, Dylan?
That's okay. I didn't think it was bad. I didn't think it was particularly good, but it was inoffensive. It was another match that probably benefited from being relatively brief. They didn't overstay their welcome, which I think is really important with a guy like Jericho, because he really has overstayed his welcome, generally speaking. So you don't want him out there pretending that he's capable of wrestling for 20 minutes, but he really isn't. I do like the fact that that the Sister Abigail into the barricade is sort of Bray's killer shot move, because that's what he used to put away Daniel Bryan at Royal Rumble.
Yeah,
so I think that that's kind of a cool sort of like underlying theme that they may have accidentally developed here, which I would like to see them use going forward. I really, you know, as far as what to do with Bray afterward, this is one of many reasons why not turning Cesaro face at WrestleMania was so stupid, because Cesaro and Bray could have had a very good feud, and Cesaro could have lost that feud and still would have benefited him. And now they're in a situation where they really don't have anybody for Bray to wrestle. So,
that the crowd wouldn't turn against because they're tired of seeing them. You know,
they screwed up Bray so badly. I don't think it's unsalvageable because he's still, you know, his entrances are still really over, and he is a regardless of how I feel about his promos and things like that, he's so unique on the main roster that he always stands out, and that's one thing that he has going for him that I think a lot of other people don't have, is that he's so clearly different than everyone else, and the announcers actually do a reasonably good job of getting that over, even if their commentary, generally speaking, isn't very good. So, I think he's probably going to be okay in the long haul, but I don't know that there's a whole lot around for him right now.
Yeah.
I do think we're going to get a third Jericho match. I don't want it, but I think we're going to get it.
This would be an awesome Jericho match. Jericho comes out in his jacket. Bray chokes him with the fucking butcher's apron. Jericho falls to the floor. As Jericho's trying to recover with the butcher's apron over his head, Bray fucking gives the Sister Abigail to the railing. You see the blood seep through the butcher's apron. Roll in, Sister Abigail, 1, 2, 3, 4-second match. Bray's stronger than ever. Jericho can go toward Fozzy. Done. Anyway.
And speaking of Fozzy, their album pretty much bombed. So
come on, it made the top 40, man.
Yeah, but it sold like 1,600 copies this last week.
Oh, but no, I think everybody who is ever going to buy a Fozzy album has already bought the Fozzy album. You know? Yeah. So
the one album.
Yeah, so anyway. So guys, let's take a break so Place to Be Nation can do their shout outs. And we come back, man, we'll run down the main event matches, the marquee matches, and then we'll continue this excursion into SummerSlam 2014. Anyway, you're listening to the Place to Be Nation.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out the Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the King of Old School, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling. Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans are wrestling off.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island, and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Return the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richer and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Okay, welcome back to the Place to Be Nation. This is the post-pay-per-view reaction show, and I'm here with Scott, Dylan, and Chris, and we are talking about SummerSlam 2014. And this next match, fellas, I think this might have been billed as the main event the way they pushed it on TV. And this is kind of that match where, even if it didn't go on last, it felt like it was the match they had the most investment in, at least from my perspective. And y'all can disagree, I don't care. But I thought it was a really fun match. Stephanie McMahon versus Brie Bella. And before anyone comments on it, I'm going to throw out the comment. I love Stephanie's outfit. I thought she was like the newest member of KISS. Like, all she needed was the KISS face paint, and she would have fit right in on stage with Gene and Paul Stanley and all those guys. So I just want to throw that out there. But thoughts on the match and the booking and the turn and everything else there, Scott?
I actually thought, this is what I'm thinking. I think Stephanie was walking around their Greenwich mansion today, and she was trying to think of what to wear, and she turns to Hunter and goes, I think Diesel has anything? I don't know. He popped his quads. He probably has a lot in his quads. No, I'm just kidding. I loved her outfit, actually. This match was, well, this is one of those cases where you really have to go in with an open mind and look at something specific. You're obviously not looking at work rate here by any stretch. So you take things like psychology in a diva's way, the crowd. Stephanie kind of had this big girl against little girl. She was almost like, it was almost like Brock Cena with females. She was the bigger, kind of more confident badass, and Brie was kind of like fumbling her way through the motions. And from a psychology perspective, I enjoyed it. Obviously, the match itself was the shits, but I think that Nikki turning was predictable, but it didn't bug me. It made sense. Brie quit, and Nikki got the crap kicked out of her for a month, so I beat the shit out of my sister, too. So I had no problem with it. I think the Authority needed to kind of re-establish themselves tonight. I know that sounds crazy, but Brie winning does nothing. She can't wrestle anyway. The only part of this feud that I didn't like was throwing the whole Daniel Bryan, you know, boning an ugly physical therapist part of the storyline, kind of stealing from Taker Brock from 2002.
Yeah, that was rough.
You know, with
man.
The crazy weird chick that just shows up and Mark and I. I didn't have a problem with this. I didn't have a problem with it tonight. I thought Triple H was supposed to be the guest referee. I don't know why they didn't do that. But
no. What was even worse was when a DDP would leave Kimberly for Sarah Taker. That was much worse.
Yeah, that's much worse. Yeah. That's even worse. I agree. But I didn't have a problem with the storytelling or psychology tonight. Crowd was a little back and forth. I think they were liking Steph at one point. But because Brie, you know, the Bellas are just so unlikable at times. And I think they needed to establish, I think this match connects with the main event, kind of the Authority's dominance. So I didn't have a problem with the way it worked out in the end. The match was anything you would have expected. If you're expecting more than what you got, then you were really dreaming. But I had no problem with it. I had no problem with the way it ended and Stephanie, you know, Diesel outfit and all coming through with the win.
I had fun watching this match, man. I thought Stephanie on offense was pretty fucking nasty, man. She was torturing her. I think the problem was when Brie got on offense was when it took a turn for the worse. But Stephanie on offense was great. What'd you think, Dylan?
You know, there's no way this is going to live up to what I wanted because I've absolutely loved the feud. I think the feud itself has been my feud of the year in wrestling from the perspective of it's had multiple long TV segments involving very minimal basic physicality, not a lot of craziness, that has got me super hyped for a match involving two people that I, in theory, would never want to wrestle. So, I think Stephanie McMahon is the best promo in wrestling by a wide margin. I don't think there's anybody else in her universe. You know, I think she put in a lot of effort tonight to play the heel really well. Still, as a match, you know, I thought... Here's the thing. I sort of agree with the idea that I heard some people laying out that this should have been more of a cat fight than a true match. It should have been more out of control than on the one hand, I can see the argument against it because the benefit of doing it the way they did it tonight was that you did have Stephanie as the sort of domineering stronger of the two beating up on Brie and that Brie could make her comeback and you could do the turn at the end. And that structure maybe doesn't lend itself quite as well to a more out of control brawl. But I felt like the way they built this feud, there needed to be that out of control element to it. And I think this match could have used a lot of the bells and whistles and smoke and mirrors bullshit that Ambrose and Rollins had. Not that I didn't like that match, because like you, Will, I liked it. I just didn't really love it. But I thought this match probably could have used a lot of that stuff even more. It's not to say it was bad. You know, it was okay. Another match I would rate sort of as an okay match. I agree that Brie's offense was pretty poor. Which hurt it. I had no problem with the turn at the end. It was predictable. Nikki really laid it in, but she really stiffed her sister, or at least it looked like it. They caught a good camera angle of it, if nothing else. Where that's going to go, I mean, does anybody really want to see Bella versus Bella? Not really. That's what we're going to get. But whatever. I mean, I hope that they continue doing something interesting with Stephanie on TV because I think she's such a great character right now. So I don't really care if she wrestles again. I thought she did a good job and acquitted herself pretty well tonight, but I don't really care if she's in the ring. I just want to see her continue as a television presence because I think she's leaps and bounds better than anybody that got
on the mic right now.
I'll agree with that. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I thought that the match was very well done, considering who's in it. And for somebody who hasn't worked in the ring for over 10 years, Stephanie was pretty damn solid tonight in what she did. The psychology, I mean, yeah, I can see, Dylan, where you were going as far as having more of a chaotic pace. But I don't think Stephanie McMahon has that in her, you know, especially considering, like I said, she ain't worked in 10 years. So I don't know if they could have done all that type of stuff in this match. Plus, her daughters are out there at ringside, so they probably didn't want to go too far, you know, with using, like, maybe weapons or anything like that. So they just
But here's the novel concept, Chris. Don't bring your fucking kids to wrestling. It's violence.
Well, yeah, but this is WWE's for the family. You know, Wu-Tang's for the children, and so is WWE. But Meltzer brought up a point, and I kind of agree with it, is this was booked kind of like what the Brock and Cena match was booked in a lot of ways, as far as Stephanie was this monster character to Breeze, you know, getting her ass kicked almost the entire match. And one spot that I loved, though, was I don't know if it was actually supposed to work this way, was when Bree was trying the plunge to the floor, and Stephanie just basically slam dunked her head on the apron. I'm like, oh my God. But and Stephanie's outfit tonight, yeah, Dave Walsh brought up on Twitter that it looks something like out of 2003 Arjun. And I could definitely see Yoshida wearing something like that, you know, from that era. So, yeah, definitely that was interesting. But, the finish of the match with Nikki, definitely everybody knew it was coming. And they got the story there, like you said, where, you know, she got the shit kicked out of her for a few weeks there. But I'm curious to know how this is going to work outside of television, because they share a Twitter account. They always post each other, a picture of each other on Instagram. How's that going to work now? You know, and they're always, you know, always talk about how, you know, they're best friends and blah, 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 blah. So, and always do TV appearances together. I know that they do it. They're going to be doing NFL Network appearances. They do every year because they're big time into fantasy football. So, I'm curious to see how that's going to play out. But this is Total Divas Season 3. This is the big angle for that show. So, that's where it was going. And Stephanie, I could see her, like, maybe being Nikki's Svengali. That'd be her new character now. Her new place is, like, managing her. They're cutting the promos for her, because we know Nikki Bella's not a good promo. So, Stephanie's not going anywhere. We won't have to worry about that. But I think she is definitely cementing her status as the Wrestling Observer Non-Wrestling Performer of the Year, no doubt. And maybe even a Hall of Fame.
No way. I mean, I don't think that you can ignore her impact on wrestling over the last 14 years, but
I'm talking about this year.
Yeah.
I'm being facetious. But yeah, she is awesome, man. She is the best heel in the company other than Brock. And so kudos her. And Triple H selling for Brie Bella. Then Triple H having the look on his face on the floor after Nikki had turned on her, as he walked by her, he had this look on his face like, yeah, I might get a threesome tonight. So I thought it was hilarious.
Hey, now, Scott, I'm disappointed you didn't throw your boy Triple H a bone there, man, like, and mention his excellent sell job for Breeze.
I think he called Sean on his cell phone and said, what'd you think? Sold it pretty good, didn't I?
Like,
maybe just as good as the leg drop that or the boot that Hogan gave you at SummerSlam 05.
Exactly, man. I knew you were going to make that reference. But you want to know what Scott's talking about? Listen to the SummerSlam rewind from 2005 that he did. Anyway, okay, guys, moving on. I think the only disappointment I had with the turn was I thought Plan C was in full effect with that Nikki Bella turning. Plan C never happened. So anyway, I was really sad about that. Anyway, next match. Randy Orton versus Roman Reigns. Once again, I strategically placed this so Dylan would have first dibs on this. continuing that theme with how bad did the Shield disappoint Dylan tonight? You know, so, I mean, what did you think about this match, Dylan?
It was fine. Again, this is like
the thing about the show, there's really nothing on the show that I thought was bad. But there was also, there were only two matches that really grabbed me. You know, one of which was the Rusev Swagger match, and then the other, which we will be talking about shortly. This, you know, there were some very well done moments in the match. The Randy Orton power slam counter, the spear, the RKO out of nowhere, the top rope Samoan drop. I mean, the superplex early on, I thought was a really good spot that looked really good. So this match had its moments. It was, I can already envision people, who are predisposed to like Randy Orton. You know, the sort of folks that talk about how he's an all-time great worker. And yes, there are many of those folks out there, sort of honing in on this match and saying, look, he got something really good out of Roman Reigns, blah, blah, blah. But here's the problem, okay? First of all, the structure of the match was fucking stupid. Roman Reigns did not get up in nearly enough offense in the early going of this. And he ended up basically, I mean, Roman Reigns should not be doing jump on the heels back sleeper spots, hope spots. He's not Ricky Morton. I mean, whoever booked that should be fired. Whatever agent laid that out should be fired right now. They should be thrown out on the streets, homeless and begging for change. Like, if you're going to book something that stupid, you don't, you like, that is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. When I was watching that, I was like, did they really just have this guy that they're trying to get over as this monster? Dude, like this monster baby face who's, you know, could kill anybody with these one or two big moves that he's got. And they just did a spot where he's doing a hope spot on a smaller man by jumping on his back with a sleeper. Who the fuck is responsible for that? I'm sorry, that's a terrible spot. You know,
it's a wheel of luck, if you will.
I just thought that was mind-blowingly stupid. And it sort of illustrated the problem I have with this. Because while I did not think it was bad, I enjoyed parts of it. There were even brief moments where I thought it was looking like it might turn into a pretty good match. I don't think it ever really quite got there. But Roman Reigns spent way too much time selling for Orton. The pacing I thought was off. It should have been a faster-paced match. Orton should have been doing more to cheat to take advantage rather than just, you know, coming out as a superior wrestler. It was a very odd, I just thought it was odd. I don't understand what the point of any of that was. I don't know why they would book a match that way with Reigns, especially because this part they don't get. This is the part they don't get, but here's the other issue. They're pushing Roman Reigns as this new big star. And I think it's debatable to how much degree the fans are into Roman Reigns, but I don't think it's as little as his critics say, and I don't think it's as much as his supporters say, but I do think he's got a lot of people that are really behind him. But the flip side of that is I think there's a lot of people who see Randy Orton as beneath Roman Reigns. The WWE doesn't see that. The WWE sees Roman Reigns, oh, he's going to get a huge victory by beating Randy Orton. You know, like, oh, this is a huge thing because Randy Orton is one of our top guys. But I think there's a lot of fans out there who look at Randy Orton and they say, Roman Reigns will fucking kill Randy Orton. Why the hell is Roman Reigns selling for Randy Orton for 10 minutes? So I thought the way the match was put together illustrates the flawed mentality of the WWE when it comes to who's who and the pecking order in that promotion. I didn't think it was a bad match. I thought it had its moments, but this was another one where I thought it was really weird how they put it together.
Chris.
I'm torn on this match. I thought the stretch run was really good, but my God, the early part of that match, oh, the headlocks and the chin locks, and Roman Reigns with the worst reverse chin lock I've seen in years. It was like, it was grinding on me. My attention was actually going more towards the Braves game, you know, and deploying this match on my other television. So, that's not a good indictment for the match for sure. And but Randy Orton working fast, this is Randy Orton. He always works these types of matches. I mean, that's his style, is to work these slow build matches. So that didn't surprise me one bit. Roman Reigns definitely was exposed tonight. in a lot of ways.
No, he wasn't.
He's not ready. He's not ready yet.
I don't think Orton's ready. I think tonight exposed Orton as much as he
well.
Yeah, the 15-year-old veteran, 15-year veteran Orton is definitely not ready. It's Orton's fault this match was not what it could have been.
No, Reigns is not ready just yet. You know, he's got to work.
I agree.
And he needs more matches like this though to help him. And I guess other opponents other than Randy Orton. But, Randy Orton totally needs to be refreshed. We had this conversation in my house tonight watching the show. Something's got to be done with him. He needs to go away for a while. Reboot him. Whatever they got to do, reboot him, make him different. You know, have something.
Put on the doink outfit, I agree. Something.
Or something.
But, although I will say this, though, this had one of my favorite wrestling memes, and I retweeted somebody that said this tonight, was one of the greatest wrestling feuds of the last 10 years is Randy Orton versus the announce table, because he it seems like he could never get anybody to break the table, and he did it again tonight. So, yeah, that was fun to watch. But, the stretch run, like I said, I thought was the best part of the match. Meltzer, I don't know what he was smoking, calling this a great match.
Yeah.
But that's Meltzer. You know, we all know how he is. But this was a fine cool down match,
Death
Watch.
Let's get Scott's view on this, and then I'm going to argue with Chris. Scott, I might argue with you too, Scott. Go.
I went into this one with very high expectations. I really wanted this to be the match, and then I knew that I wanted it to be the sleeper of the night because I really wanted to see these two guys. The last few years as a wrestling fan, I've become very up and down with guys with certain workers. I'll hate a guy for about 6 months, and I'll get into his stuff, and then I'll hate him again, and then I've been that way with Orton. I couldn't stand him. Pretty much from last year's SummerSlam until he lost at Mania. And then from that point on, I've kind of dug him again. Being an Evolution doesn't hurt, but I've kind of dug his matches again. So I went in with this philosophy of, I really feel good about this match. And I was disappointed. Except for the very cool RKO. That RKO he snapped off on the Superman punch was pretty cool. I like Roman Reigns a lot, but I agree with the guys. He's definitely not ready. He doesn't know how to sell.
That's not what he should be doing.
He's not, but how many Brock Lesnars are we going to have, Will?
He doesn't have to be Brock Lesnar. He's coming up. It's okay if you sell occasionally. He does sell when he gets hit, like with the RKO. I mean, his landing was fine. The kick out was fine. His little glazed over eye is fine. The problem is he shouldn't have been sitting in a headlock for the first 15 minutes of the fucking match, letting Randy Orton dominate. And, you know, what should have happened was Reigns should have fucking wiped the fucking arena clean with Randy Orton. Then Reigns fucking goes for the spear, runs into the fucking turnbuckle, runs into a railing, runs over the Spanish announce team, whatever. Then Orton can capitalize. You know what I mean? What it looked like was, I'm Randy Orton. I'm fucking going to toy with you for 20 minutes. Oh, let's go hit our big spots for the last five. That's not that's the agent's fault. That's fucking whoever fucking helped put that match together. That's their fault.
Joey Mercury. No, I don't know.
I totally agree with you, Will, on that.
That's what I'm saying. But that's not Roman Reigns' fault. But that's not Roman Reigns' fault because, Dylan, if we're going to put the Shield in the conversation for one of the best factions ever, blah, 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 how did they book Roman Reigns in the Shield? Let Rollins or Ambrose get their ass beat. Who's going to fucking clean house? And who almost never got wiped out or never showed weakness? Roman Reigns. That's why people fucking loved him, because he was a badass. You know?
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. It's not that Roman Reigns isn't ready. The way they fucking book him and put his matches together is the weakness, not necessarily Reigns as a wrestler.
The problem is they want him to be Cena. They want, and Cena's whole thing is he's always overcoming the odds. And all of a sudden, it's like you can't. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure they would kill if they had 10 John Cena's, in the sense of guys who put in that much work and their work ethic, and they always do promo stuff. And I understand that mentality, but you cannot. This is a major flaw. The idea that that's how the only way you can book a top babyface. You know, and when you've got,
again, I'm going to mention this again, because can anybody justify Roman Reigns doing a jump on the back, cling for dear life, you know, sort of Ricky Morton-style hope spot to fucking Randy Orton? It's completely illogical. It makes no sense. There's no justification for that whatsoever. I don't care who called it. I don't care if it was called in the ring by Orton. I don't care if Reigns himself called it. I don't care if the agents put it together. Whoever put that spot together is a moron. That is a horrible, you know, it's not even that I disagree in the sense that I understand that there are things Reigns can be better at and that he'll need to improve that if he's going to be the top guy. I don't even disagree with that point. But I do think this whole thing about his selling is really overrated, because look who – it's not like they put him in there with guys who know how to work heat sections with the shit. I mean, Randy Orton, you know, this match was not set up in the way where Randy Orton was trying to do anything to meaningfully build heat in the match. So I can't criticize Reigns for that. I just can't. I can't look at Roman Reigns and say, well, you know, when he was underneath, he didn't really do anything. That's the match was laid out in an absolutely counterproductive way, 100%. And I still didn't think it was a bad match, but it was not put together the way you need to put together a match like this. And the biggest problem with it is Randy Orton should not be on WWE TV right now, because nobody wants to see him. And he's in this weird position where the company sees him as a top guy, and the fans don't want to see him at all.
Exactly.
Yes, he's got a couple spots that are really over. I completely agree with that. But as a whole, the fans have given up on Randy Orton. So anybody who's in there with him is going to they're going to look worse than they are. I don't care who it is. And that's not entirely Orton's fault.
This is why I've always thought that there needs to be an off, I don't say an off season in wrestling, but I think there needs to be kind of a vacation rotation. Where wrestlers take,
and they're on 4 9-month schedules or something.
Yeah, yeah, and they take some time off to kind of rejuice. I agree with that. You can't. Randy Orton is a stud. I hate to say it, but sometimes you just get worn out of guys. And Kane's different. Kane just needs to go away forever.
But see, I feel the same way about Randy Orton now that I do about Kane.
Oh, no way.
Check this out, Scott. When we were doing the 2010 SummerSlam Rewind, I watched a decent Randy Orton Sheamus match that would mechanically, you know, was good, and that if we'd have had this talk 4 years ago, I probably would have praised it. But I was like, man, I'm just so fed up looking at both of those guys that I can't enjoy it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I didn't enjoy it.
Sure.
And there's nothing Randy Orton can do in this current state to get me to enjoy his match, you know? And so
it's not even his fault. That's the thing. It's not his fault.
But, you know, but you gotta, like you said, you can't miss somebody unless they go away. And until that happens, you know,
you're gonna get these issues.
But I just disagree strongly with you and Chris with the contention that it's Reigns' fault that match was fucking boring for the first 15 minutes.
It wasn't his fault. I didn't say it was his fault. I said it was.
He's not ready. I said, how is?
Yeah, but I said that before. I mean, he's still very inexperienced in that role. He was great in the role he was in the Shield. He's got to learn how to become singles wrestler.
Yeah,
but
he's exposed as
being a weak singles wrestler
I think the problem. I think the problem even more than his selling of somebody else's offense, because Dean Ambrose isn't that great at it either, because they didn't have to do it much.
Yeah.
When they were in the Shield. So that'll come in time. What I think, when I watch a Roman Reigns singles match, he's got great spots. The Superman punch, that awesome. He didn't do it tonight, I don't think. My buddy's Apple TV was kind of being a bitch, but
I love the network, bro, because I was having those problems.
Well, my buddy's, the Apple TV kept bouncing backwards. Like, we'd be in the middle of a match, and all of a sudden, like, we were in the middle of Bray Jericho, and then something would happen, and it'd go back to Paige and AJ. It was really weird. It was kind of strange.
That sucks.
I'd have
like
any
this
issues,
page not, match. So. No. Roman Reigns has great spots. The Superman punch looks good. That apron kick that he didn't do tonight. I don't think he did it tonight.
He did it.
He did do it.
That spot's awesome. And his spear, like everybody else's spear, is awesome. Roman Reigns
except
still
that
has the
Edge
word.
Had the worst spear in human history. Sorry. it was more let me hug your waist as you go down.
Who's that?
It's Edge.
Oh. Edge never was able to judge distance for a long time either. Roman Reigns still has to learn how to get to those points. His in-between setups, a lot of punches and kicks, and after a while that stuff just gets stale.
Well, you know what he is, and Dylan makes a scene of comparison, that he's the Rock. He's basically, they want him to be the next Rock. And in a lot of ways, if you watch Rock from in 97 and early 98.
Same thing.
And you see a lot of similarities there between the two as they were learning to become better workers. And Rock relied a lot on the punches. He had his key spots at the elbow, rock bottom. You know, he had his key spots he had to hit in this match. But it was a different era, and they weren't having all matches like this. He was working against guys like Austin and Triple H and guys like that. So it was a different style then, the Attitude Era style.
Well, yeah, you go from a big spot, and then Rock could spend 8 minutes in the crowd throwing chairs and all that kind of jazz. So, you're absolutely right. Now, it's different.
Yeah, this match needed to be half the time it was.
Yeah.
This should have been definitely a shorter match. But Randy Orton has this, standing in the company, and Flair said it tonight on the pre-show, and I said, what the fuck are you talking about? When he called him, he said Randy Orton is the best performer in wrestling today.
All
the old timers say that.
Booker T said it on there. Booker T's always on Randy Orton's dick. So I mean, that feeling is also backstage, and you hear it on commentary. JBL's always saying that Randy Orton is the if you put a sports entertainer in a factory and created him, it's Randy Orton. That's the way they feel about him. He's the prototype,
Well, technically, Cena was the prototype.
But that's the way they feel about him. So as long as they feel that way and they feel like he's bulletproof, then that's the way it's going to be.
We're talking about match lengths. They must not have cleaned up this Wikipedia column yet, they have the Rusev Swagger match is 1856. That can't be right.
Yeah, that's maybe 856.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. Reigns and Orton, according to this, was 16-16.
It felt like 32-32. it felt like 30 minutes.
This must be wrong because it has the main event with only 2 minutes and 39 seconds.
Oh.
Maybe it felt like that for just...
Dude, that's some fantasy book and Wikipedia shit, man.
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck half this crap was. They gotta definitely fix
that's
this.
That's hilarious. Okay, that's guys.
All right, I was just curious to see what they had for their lengths, but... Will, I've been on Roman Reigns for months. I like Reigns a lot. All I'm saying is... How do we word it? Maybe Orton isn't the right guy because he gets a little funny in the ring.
No, but I get what y'all are saying because he's had dead matches with Cesaro. He's had dead matches with a lot of other talent where the crowd is dead for the entire match and then they pop up for the big spots at the end.
Right.
I get that part. But what I'm saying is that to me, part of it is this booking. It's just that philosophy where, well, these guys have to go 25 in the main. Well, yeah, maybe someday they do. You know what I mean? It's okay to have a main eventer that goes fucking 5 to 10 minutes and destroys dudes. You know what I mean? It's okay. You can have that. It's not a big deal. You know what I mean? Because people like those kind of guys.
Right.
Your Ronda Rouseys, your Mike Tysons. Oh, you know what? Usually when you bought their pay-per-views, you didn't really watch a very long match.
Right. There's a big difference. Those are shoots.
Doesn't matter. Who's one of the biggest fucking guys in wrestling history during the Attitude Era? Goldberg. You know why people loved Goldberg? Because he destroyed dudes in fucking 4 minutes.
Yeah. Right?
That's why they loved him. That's why they put the strap on him. And people went nuts for that dude because of it. Once you start having him try to do something he's not supposed to be.
But remember what they did with him, though, after he won the title. They could have been longer matches. God, remember the DDP Halloween Havoc match, for God's sake?
Yeah, it was a great match.
Yeah, but
that was just bad.
That was
satellite booking,
match.
Not wrestling booking. There's a difference there.
I don't know, man. That was a pretty fucking hot match. It was a pretty good match. So, but maybe the best American match in 1998. So, having said that, we can argue that for another show. But anyway, I think the jury's still out on Reigns, but if they continue to book him the way they have been booking him, I agree with you guys. He won't be ready.
They need a fresh heel character for him, and I just don't know who it is. Who is it going to be?
Yeah.
And it's the theme of this show. Who is next? Talking about Goldberg. Who's next?
Yeah, well, speaking of what's next, Chris, we'll start with you. Main event time, John Cena versus Brock Lesnar. The first match they had when Brock returned was like an all-time classic. Bloody, nasty, kind of straddled the line between work and shoot, and that it was so stiff and engaging, and it was just what a great spectacle. This one, not even close to that one, but I loved it. I loved watching Brock Lesnar destroy John Cena. I didn't think it was going to be the world's longest squash like it ended up being, but I still loved every bit of it. What'd you think?
I've never seen a WWE main event on a show like this, pay-per-view show, big show, any show, that was that much of a squash match. I mean, that was just insane. Brock was just, and it was rightfully done. They needed to do that, in my opinion. If you want to get Brock over as this, you know, huge monster, you've already had him beat the Undertaker, break the streak, now take out the next guy who's the face of the company in John Cena and just destroy him with 16 German suplexes and just throw him around like a rag doll and beat the holy shit out of him and basically take like three moves the whole match, and two of them are John Cena's finishers. And it was all inspiring to watch. I mean, my buddies were over here watching with me and were like, I'm legitimately scared of this guy. Like a Brock. And that's the guy, if I saw him, if I woke up and I see him standing over my bed, I'm going to shit my pants. I mean, he has that aura about him right now with some fans. And that's great. You need that. They haven't had that in so long. Because you look at all the world champions they've had lately, whether Cena, Orton, Bryan, Batista, Del Rio, whoever, they all are like company guys. Brock Lesnar is the farthest thing from a company guy. He has this outlaw, you know, mystique about him right now. He's a mercenary. So it's something they haven't had in a long time as their champion. And everything was well done. Brock looked like he was about to explode though towards the end there. I mean, it was getting a little scary. Like he was looking like Barney the Dinosaur towards the end of the match. He was so purple. But yeah, I loved it. And it was totally different than the Extreme Rules match, and it needed to be. But both of them were great in their own way. Do I think blood could have worked here? Maybe, but whatever. It really didn't matter in the end. The fans were into it. The visual of Brock with the belts afterwards, yeah. And they tried to recreate that whole Undertaker deal with the fans, where they would show Brock, then show a fan, show Brock, show a fan, and they didn't really get everything they wanted from that, so they stopped it. But yeah, kudos on that, on the booking on that. I thought it was great.
Scott, your thoughts, bud?
I knew that I was not going to compare this match to Extreme Rules 2012 only because that one was a no DQ, so they were able to really push the envelope and make it great. It wasn't going to happen here. This is the way this match needed to be booked. Brock Lesnar right now is being booked as the greatest, most dominant human being on the planet in any capacity. Boxing, UFC. People forget that, you know, people don't want to talk about the Cain Velasquez knocked him cold. This was what you needed tonight. I think you needed a clean, destructive beatdown. A lot of people have said that it went a little slow, but I think it's just the way that Brock stalks. He's good at stalking, although a lot of people thought that he looked like he was going to have a heart attack. His like, face looked like he had high blood pressure or something, but he stalked, and he looked great doing it. He's just good at that. He's just good at being a douche. sometimes people are born with it. Sometimes you make it up. But Cena just took a beat down. I'm glad we didn't get any, like, crappy blood capsule, you know, Ken Shamrock internal bleeding nonsense. That would have been quite unbelievable. But I think it was booked the way it needed to be booked. I think Brock needed to look dominant, because if the bookers have a clue as to what they plan on doing between now and San Francisco, then this is where it needs to start. So I didn't have a problem with it. I'm glad they didn't do anything funny at the end. For once, a SummerSlam that doesn't end with a failed or succeeded Money in the Bank. I don't know how long, with Brock as champ, I don't know how long Seth's going to keep it without people starting to stop caring. But they didn't do that with Dolph or even Daniel Bryan. So, but I enjoyed the pace of the match. I think Cena sold everything like a champ. It was booked as good as it could be. Although when he hit that
FU,
when he hit that FU and went for the two, I thought he was going to get the three count. I was going to laugh my ass off, but that didn't happen. I think that it's fine for what it was. I'm curious to hear, you know, what you guys think of it, how it could have been better. But I think Cena's spots were in the right places of the match, placement of the match. And Brock won pretty convincingly, and I think that's the way it needed to be done.
Dylan?
I thought it was a great match. It was easily the best match on the show. If you're somebody who looks for that sort of give and take, back and forth, obviously you're probably not going to like this match as much as me, but that's, like, to me, the parity between offense is like the least important thing in a wrestling match. In fact, the more parity you have, the less likely I am to enjoy it. So this was a very, very well done match. I think one thing this match really illustrates is anybody who thinks John Cena is selfish or, you know, he doesn't put people over. A lot of the criticisms of him as a promo in that regard, I can sort of understand, but I've always thought the criticisms of him as a wrestler in that regard are kind of ridiculous. And to me, this match is probably the single best example of that, because there's actually no wrestler that has been presented as the ace of any promotion that I can think of in modern wrestling history. And I'm talking like basically televised TV wrestling that would have taken this match this way. No one would agree to that. Can you imagine Hogan agreeing to this? Bruno?
No.
Like, come on. There's no way on earth. So Cena deserves a ton of credit for that. It was, because it wasn't just that Brock dominated him. It's that Brock took his two biggest moves and basically shrugged them off at the end of the day. this is how Brock should have been booked from the beginning, okay? The problem is he wasn't booked his way from the beginning, and I think you're going to have two camps going forward. You're going to have one camp that I think is along the lines of Chris and Scott and the people that were watching, maybe with both of you guys, who sort of were like, Brock is a scary motherfucker. You know, he's the biggest beast in wrestling, whatever. And then you're going to have another camp, which I think I'm closer to this camp, which is, well, you know, he's lost as many matches as he's won in WWE. So what do I give a fuck? You know, what has he really done that, is really all that impressive? I mean, I'm sure the argument is this year that he's taken Taker streak and then he did this to John Cena. But to me, this feels like, in the back of my mind, I just can't help but think, if they were going to do this with Brock, why didn't they do this before? Why does he have losses on his record to Triple H and John Cena already? It just feels like a really boneheaded thing to do in hindsight. We thought it was boneheaded at the time to one degree or another, but even more so in hindsight. I'm also concerned about what this means going forward. As a match, standalone, I thought it was great. Some of the bumps Cena took in this were completely insane for a guy of his frame especially.
Yeah, no shit.
I think an all-time a tremendous performance from John Cena, frankly. And Brock looked great at what he was doing, don't get me wrong, but Cena, I think, is the one who made the match.
Just the way he looks. The way he looks so helpless. Just
yeah, like, I mean, the way he took everything and the timing of his comebacks and then the utter futility of them. I mean, I just thought he was tremendous in this. Brock was very good. But I thought Cena was clearly the star of the match in terms of he was the guy that made this a great match, you know. But I'm concerned about what this means going forward, you know. On the previous podcast that you and I did, Will, with Charles, we talked about the opportunity here for a Cena heel turn. And I'm not saying it had to be done here, and I'm not even saying it necessarily would have been the only way to do it.
The ultimate plan C. It was
plan
there.
Plan C, yeah.
Cena.
But what I will say is this. I think there's a lot of people who would say that was really risky, and that what they did here was a much safer move. I actually think this is far riskier. I think putting in the network era, putting a title on a guy who shows up maybe 6-7 times a year, who's not going to wrestle every week, who's not even going to be on TV every week. You know, like, I've seen some people make the argument that's going to make the belt more important. There's a time where I would have bought that, but I don't buy that now. I think there's going to be a lot of people who they need right now every event that they have on the network to come across as a special event that will draw people. And if they don't have title matches on that, what are they going to do? You know, like, if the champion himself doesn't value the network shows enough to show up for them, why the hell should you pay $9.99 to see them? And to me, that makes it... This isn't about, like, me bashing Brock Lesnar for not working a full schedule. Because, to me, if you can get away with what he's doing, more power to him. I think that's great. But it's more about, is this really the safest move? Because the mentality has been, this is the smart move, this is the safe move. You take the belt, you put it on Brock, you build up to Brock versus Reigns or Brock versus whoever. You know, you establish that strong heel. And I agree with it in theory, except the strong heel's not going to be there every week. And yes, you got Paul Heyman, who's a great promo, but Paul Heyman's also a guy that has made every single wrestler, with the exception of Brock, that he's been with during this run, less over than they were before they were with Heyman. So I'm very nervous about this going forward. I think it is a much riskier proposition than people are you know, suggesting.
And see, I'm going to disagree. I'll tell you why I disagree is we always talk about the overexposure of everybody in the promotion because we see them so much. To have somebody like Brock who only comes around every other month or whatever, it makes his matches more special. The fact that we don't see him on Raw every week, or we don't see him on SmackDown every week, or we don't see him on every single pay-per-view, it makes the times that he does compete on those shows more special. And I understand you're talking about the network making every show like that, but you're on these commitments anyway. So
not necessarily.
That is not true anymore.
Not anymore.
Yeah, but still, you know, it kind of, like I said, it makes the shows he's on more special, and it keeps feuds fresh and stuff like that. And
I'll be honest. I'm dropping the network. I've already decided I'm dropping the network, and I will buy the individual pay per views going forward on the 1 month $12.99 deal that they've got, because the network has been so spotty to me that it's not worth the money for me. With how spotty the issues I've had with the feed consistently from day one, and you know, I'm not gonna re up.
Well, they're still getting your money. That's all that matters. They're still getting your money.
Well, they've got my money now. They won't get my money going forward except for the individual event. And I think there is a very strong possibility that there are a lot of people who are going to do that. I think the 6 month commitment. I think it's dangerous to have a champion who wrestles four times a year when you're trying to push people into six-month commitments. That's all I'm saying. I actually agree with your point in the sense that it does feel like a bigger deal when Brock's around, and ideally you want more people like that. I don't even disagree with that. I just think the timing of this is not necessarily the best. And, you know, if I was a fan, that was more casual than I am, and I'm watching this, you know, and I'm even thinking about signing up for the network, you know, I'm certainly not going to get a 6 month commitment if the next two pay-per-views don't have Brock Lesnar on it and he's the champion. Why would I do that?
Well, I guess you'll have the Hell in the Cell, and then you'll also have, I don't know, you have the gimmick pay-per-views.
Well, Night of Champions is going to be loaded up. We already know that.
And then the Hell in the Cell will sell the Hell in the Cell. What were you going to say, Scott?
I was very skittish about, you know, what his schedule is going to be now. But I think that if there is a plan, now I've always been a big, ever since the build from Breakdown 98 till Austin won the title back at WrestleMania 15, I've always been a very strong component of a good, well-booked WrestleMania arc. And you need to plan it out for those 7 months. Now things have changed. I mean, you know, that February pay-per-view with the Chamber is kind of changes things up a little bit. But now that we only have one belt, now there's no choice. Brock has to at least be at that. Because now that you only have one belt, we go back to having one Rumble winner. We don't need two Chambers. So he at least has to show up at the last two pay-per-views before WrestleMania 31. He's got to be at the Rumble because you got to have a Rumble title match. You just have to. That's the way life works. And obviously he's going to have to defend the title at the Chamber unless they decide to ditch that pay-per-view and do something else because they kind of go, like I said, they all have the attention spans of 11-year-olds. So Lord only knows they may even...
Isn't that the fucking truth, man?
Yeah, they may even get rid of the Chamber pay-per-view in February and do something else, go back to No Way Out or whatever. I don't know. So I know he'll at least be at those two. He'll be at Survivor Series. Question is, will he be at Night of Champions, Hell in a Cell, and TLC?
Oh, he'll be on Night of Champions because they're loading that up. That's the last six-month commitment show.
Yeah, he kind of has to, otherwise it's not Night of Champions.
And it's Night of Champions. And I would not be surprised if they did him and Brian at the Rumble.
They're going to have to do him and Brian at the Rumble because if they don't do him and Brian at the Rumble and Brian is, assuming he's healthy enough to come back, which is debatable. But if they don't do him versus Bryan at the Rumble, they're going to have full-blown revolt, and Roman Reigns is going to be thrown under a bus in a fashion that is going to be nothing compared to... I mean, it's going to be far worse than Dave Bautista. If Bryan's back and he doesn't win the Royal Rumble again this year, and again it's another hand-picked WWE guy, that's not going to work. That would kill Roman Reigns' entire career. He'd be done.
Yeah, I agree.
They can't do that.
And you bring up Batista. I think that's probably who Lesnar will have in the interim.
See, okay, I think so too. I think if Batista came back, you do Roman Reigns versus Batista in 10-minute matches. You know what I mean?
They're bringing Dave back as a face. They're going to try to bring him back as a face again.
Why?
I don't think he'll ever see Batista again.
Because of his success as Drax or what?
Yeah, no, because I think he's just fed up with jobbing. He's another dickhead.
No, man. He was pretty. I thought he was pretty professional about the way he handled everything. Honestly, you know.
Yeah, but I don't think he's going to come back to being Brock's bitch. I just don't see that happening.
No, I don't know. I agree with that. But
he's too old. There's only two guys you're going to put in the ring in San Francisco that anybody's going to give a crap about facing Brock Lesnar, Daniel Bryan, or if by some strike of God, CM Punk.
It's going to be Roman Reigns. I mean, that's the.
And if it is Roman Reigns, you're going to have, you're not going to have a half empty. People are going to go to Levi anyway, whether the show sucks or not, because that's just WrestleMania. But you may have, you know, a pretty tough sell of more network subscriptions. Brock Lesnar.
If they book Reigns like he's booked now, yes.
Brock Lesnar needs. You can have Roman Reigns down the line. The guy's only 20 something. I mean, you know, everyone. If I get this feeling, and it's not from any of you guys, but I'm sure a lot of people are getting this feeling that if they don't book, if Roman Reigns does win the title by WrestleMania 31, he's screwed. Might as well release him. Like suddenly, all of a sudden, the wrestling world is only a 6-month window. What needs to happen is Brock Lesnar. If you want to really have a good, great build for WrestleMania 31, and you want to keep Brock as champion all the way to that point, he needs to face a guy who is the ultimate underdog. No one's going to want to see a guy at WrestleMania who looks exactly, not looks exactly, but physically is the same height as Brock and looks like Brock. No one's going to buy that. You can have that at somewhere down the line, But the whole point of having Brock Lesnar as champion is him being a guy who can beat everybody. And I think visually, when you see whoever he faces in San Francisco, it's got to be somebody smaller than him.
Yeah,
somebody,
I think Daniel Bryan's new gimmick is wrestle only at WrestleMania to win the world title. Lose it on a fluke or a fluke injury and just have to rehab for a year and come back.
Better schedule than Brock has.
Yeah, no shit.
I think Brock, this will sound crazy considering what I just said, but if I was booking and the idea is that Brock is going to be my champion and the idea is that we're going to present him and book him the way we supposedly should have booked him, or I believe we should have booked him from the very beginning, you know, as this sort of unstoppable monster and whatnot and all that sort of thing, then I don't think he should be losing WrestleMania at all, frankly. I think he should hold the belt for a year or longer. I mean, if you're going to go all in with the idea, you got to go all in with the idea. I mean, Dominant Champions don't have the title for four matches. I mean, maybe that sounds crazy, but that's another thing about this that I wonder is if they're going to go all in with this, they need to go all in. That's going to entail them presenting Brock not just as a special attraction, but as a guy that doesn't lose for a long time, because he's already lost a lot for a guy that doesn't wrestle that much. His win percentage ain't that great in the company for a guy that doesn't wrestle.
The thing is, Dylan, is I know that we remember that stuff, but a lot of people don't remember that. Triple H.
You know what? I know you. I knew somebody was going to say that, and I'm so glad you said that, because I don't doubt for one second that, you know, the guys you watch it with may have a different reaction than the guys I talk to. But every single time Brock Lesnar has come up with people I talk to about wrestling that are completely in no way related to this bubble of people on this podcast, it is always joking and laughing about how he hasn't beaten anybody since he's been back until he beat Taker this year. So I don't believe that's true, at least not universally.
Even though he did win the feud with Triple H and he did beat Punk, nobody remembers that. They remember the two jobs he did back-to-back, yeah.
And I think this win will do a lot to help him out of that, absolutely. But I wish there had been a little bit more before it, or a little bit less of him losing on the back end, because I don't think that stench is entirely off of him. And in fact, I know the stench isn't entirely off of him, and let me tell you how I know. Because this year, whenever he beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania, the crowd was completely shocked. And I don't think it had nearly as much to do with the fact that Taker lost the streak as much as it did that the theory has been Brock Lesnar is the guy that comes in and jobs to the top stars, not beat them. And I think that was just as much a factor in that live reaction as the fact that Taker actually lost. Because they didn't even present Brock as a guy that had a chance against Taker. You know, Taker won all the physical. Brock was presented as a joke. Well, you know, this whole rehab of Brock Lesnar started on the night of WrestleMania, in a lot of ways.
And really, only when that 1-2-3 happened, because even then the crowd did not give a shit about the match because there was no drama in that match.
This is a very fresh rehab of him. The Cena thing is absolutely a step in the right direction. And to that end, this match booked and wrestled absolutely perfectly. But I'm not sold on the idea that this is like a switch just went off tonight, and all of a sudden it's going to be smooth sailing on this idea of Brock as an unbeatable monster, especially when he only wrestles four or five times a year.
Yeah,
they're going to have to find other ways to develop that. And Heyman talking, as great as he can be at times, I don't think is the way to do it. There's got to be some other element they're going to have to bring in.
So, guys, I want to thank all of you for appearing on the show. Before we leave, though, I'm going to give you all a chance to get some plugs in. Zellner, what's up with the Lucha Report? I know we had a big Triple Mania tonight. Anything big go down?
Yeah, the Lucha Report's up on the usual places. Def Valley Driver, I think Alfredo, I don't know if he's posted at Yellow Lucha World, but it's coming. Alberto Del Rio, or as he's now known as El Patron, debuted tonight. Was the conquering hero at the close of the show as he...
So he's a face in AAA.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising because I thought they would have pulled the swerve, but he was there with his dad, and he got over on Paraguay Jr. at the Paro
beat Mistresses, which is hilarious.
That's
because
awesome.
Now it seems like that El Patron has now become the number one Technico in the promotion
over
his good old buddy, his good old buddy Mistresses. But
awesome.
Yeah, Triple Mania sounded like a wild show, and they had some horrible issues with their web feed tonight. So their track record on iPay-per-view is very, very bad right now. And Rey Mysterio sent a taped video that aired after the main event. I don't know how much of it aired on the feeds. I know it did air a part of it on some of them. And basically, he's talking about how he started in AAA and he's probably going to finish in AAA.
Well, I think what Rey Mysterio is going to do is he's going to go slap somebody at WWE.
But, yeah, everything kind of, although they did. Jeff Jarrett and Ricochet had airline issues and were not able to make the show tonight, which is hilarious. But the show, other than the web feed, sounded like it went off pretty well.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's what's going on. And also, I want to plug a podcast I did this week with our own good friend Johnny Sorrow and Steve Graham about Magnum TA.
Nice.
I thought that was a great show on the Pro Wrestling Super Show. And, It's good to check it out. Johnny's Nikita is as good as anybody's Nikita Koloff impression ever.
Yeah.
Great show.
Agree. All right, well, make sure you check that. We love Steven. I love giving him a hard time because I hate Canadians. And speaking of Canadians, Dylan, what are you and your Canadian Dr. Evil up to over at Wrestling Culture?
We got some shows lined up, hopefully for the fairly, I'd say, I don't want to say we'll do one for sure this week, but I'd say it's very likely we'll do a new episode of Wrestling Culture this week. We've got a few things going on. We've got the Great Sting debate coming up. So that's on the dock. That's going to be pretty soon. Maybe
his commercial aired tonight.
It did. And
Sting had a commercial tonight?
Yeah, the 2K commercial. They aired it again.
Yeah, whatever.
And then, we'll do Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame season. We're basically right there, so we'll probably have at least one or two shows on that.
Fine.
And we got some other stuff coming up. And beyond that, for the time being, I'm still doing Impact reviews at VoicesOfWrestling.com. God knows Impact doesn't have long left for this world, it doesn't look like.
Especially after this weekend.
What happened to this
weekend? Bully Ray put in his notice. He's left the promotion.
Really?
Their top babyface just left.
That's like Stone Cold just walking out on. Well, not the same because Bully Ray's not Stone Cold, but isn't that like the equivalent of like Stone Cold just picking up and leaving?
It's pretty bad. I mean, those shows have been built largely around him as the top guy. So
that's awesome.
It's a pretty substantial development, and then so that's going on and. But I'll do them for the time being, as long as they've got a show. And also, you can follow me on Twitter at Dylan Waco, DylanWaco.
All right. And my buddy Scott, what's going on with the Place to Be podcast and the main event, brother?
Well, this coming, tomorrow or today, depending when you're listening, the next episode of the Place to Be podcast, Justin Rosero and I will be with Scott Keith, and we're going to do a little mailbag action, talk about this show a little bit. And then also some SummerSlam discussion this week on Main Event. We're going to have a special guest joining us. Ben Morse cannot make the show this week, so we have a special guest that we'll announce that night joining us. So pretty much more SummerSlam recaps and
Raw fallout and all that.
Yeah, reflections, because there's a lot more Brock Lesnar love and hate that will be coming through. So,
right on.
But yeah, this coming week, episode 320, I think we're up to 328 of the Place to Be podcast. Justin and I will have Scott Keith on, and we'll talk a little mailbag and his thoughts on SummerSlam.
Hey, and your boy Kevin Kelly, I know you're getting close to where he stopped working for WWF. So is he not going to do the half year shows anymore, or is he still?
We'll find a slot for him. He's got one more to do. I mean, our next vintage vault is WrestleMania 19.
I think he worked through Backlash, though. So I think we got two left with him, and then he'll do that, and we'll find something for him to do.
Right on, right on.
He's not gonna. He's got to earn his keep. He's got his own. He's got his own show here. He's got to earn his keep.
Y'all can do the ROH roundup or something.
I know. Yeah. Exactly.
All right. Well, cool. Well, guys, had a fun time tonight. I want to thank everybody for listening, and hopefully we'll see you here next month. If I don't know about Dylan, he might not have the network. He might just say, forget the network. I'm not watching this shit. So, but
I always find ways to watch pay per views. That's all right, I'll say.
Let's not advertise.
He'll just do anti click podcasts. That's all he'll do.
Oh yeah. Hey, we'll do a Sean Waltman fetish show if you want, dude. I'm a huge Waltman fan, bro.
The highs and lows of the New Age Outlaws.
Yeah, not going to do that.
Oh, shit.
You can do the lows, and the even lowers of the New Age Outlaws.
Oh, stop.
They suck. Anyway, guys, it was fun talking to y'all, and we'll catch y'all next month for Night of the Champions here on the Place to Be Nation. Good night.
Of a break from the norm, just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix, and if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past, adjust the bass and let the alpine blast. Pop in my CD and let me run around and put your car on cruise and lay back, cause this is summertime.